Fox and B. Frank show. What a week. What a week of college football. Many said going into it that this could be one of the biggest Saturdays in years. It certainly lived up to the hype in many ways. We have to start with our correspondent, B. Frank, boots on the ground reports in our favorite Tennessee bar, witnessing the Vols finally take down Alabama 52-49. Your thoughts?
Vibes were high. It was just incredible. The swing of emotions in the fourth quarter alone was something that I have not seen. And the atmosphere overall is something I have not seen since the 2016 Cubs World Series run. Like, that is the only thing that I can compare it to. It was that chaotic and exciting and hectic. I had to put some notes down because, as I told you pre-show, it's all a blur at this point. I just remember singing Rocky Top a lot. My voice was in bad shape. And then not knowing what to do with myself after the fact, because it was like 7 o'clock and there was still like, how do you come down from that high? As far as the game went, like, obviously fun affair, 21 points in the first quarter for Tennessee. They really set the tone early. And often Alabama's defense was just shredded throughout this game by Hendon Hooker. The passing attack was phenomenal, and they made big plays when they needed to. Couple moments where throughout that lead, you're like, okay, this is fun. 21-7, 28-10, this is all great. But Alabama still feels like they're hanging around. They've still got the Bryce Young at quarterback there. They've still got so many weapons offensively. Like, all they need is one or two little breaks to go their way, and this game can break wide open, and all of a sudden Alabama can get right back in it. They had the back-to-back fourth down, failed to convert on fourth down, one in the first half late that led to an Alabama field goal, and then the second one to start the second half when Bama came back down right after and tied it up, and that felt like the tide was turning. And then Hendon Hooker hits Jalin Hyatt on the deep ball for, what, like 65 yards, and the lead is back for Tennessee. Then you get the bad pass interference call that gets Alabama inside the five, and then they score again. Then you get the scoop and score to give Alabama the lead late, and that felt like the moment where you're in the casket, the grave has been dug, the dirt is getting poured on, and then all of a sudden that scoop and score happens. Tennessee fights back, gets a stop. College kickers being college kickers yet again, miss the field goal. And then I thought that the kick was short. And so I had head in hands as everyone around me is screaming. And then only realized after a few seconds that the ball did go through the uprights. Tennessee wins. Chaz McGrath makes up for the missed extra point earlier in the game. And yeah, we were singing Rocky Top.
Just a wild, wild affair. The goalposts taken from Neyland Stadium, and then Tennessee just grifting fans into paying for a new one, which was the one missed up, I will say, from Tennessee in this whole thing. But yeah, I think the scoop and score for Alabama was really the point in the game where it did seem like, you know, This was a fun run, but, you know, reality is setting in.
Yep.
Alabama's kind of finally remembering who they are. But, I mean, it's something you don't see a lot. A Nick Saban team just not being able to close out a game there. Obviously, a ton of credit goes to Josh Heupel in Tennessee. This team has turned into an absolute wagon so quickly. The offense is so much fun. The defense is what it is. We knew that coming in. The secondary hasn't been great. They were down a couple of players in this game anyway. You don't need to give Bryce Young that much help to begin with. But, I mean, the offense, Hendon Hooker, still right up there in the Heisman race. And, of course, Jalin Hyatt. I mean, just an all-time line. 6 catches, 207 yards, all 5 of Hendon Hooker's touchdown passes. Can you say this is just an all-time win? And I mean, no better way to end a 15-game losing streak to Alabama than doing it in dramatic fashion like this.
Yeah, and you said it perfectly. It was like, we've seen this episode before. Tennessee fans have been here before. I mean, any fan of most teams in the SEC have been here before. Lead over Alabama. Things are going great. All of a sudden, something happens in the third or fourth quarter. The tide turns literally and figuratively, and then all of a sudden, you lose by a score or two. This was, without a doubt, one of the worst, best games I've seen Alabama play. For sure, 17 penalties, school record for 130 yards. They still had the ball for 37 and a half minutes in this game. Just absolutely dominating time of possession. Part of that due to the fact that Tennessee was just hitting on so many big plays. But also, the defense is still pretty good at Alabama. Don't let the 52 points fool you. Like, this is maybe the best offense in the country, Tennessee. I think they're certainly in the top five, top 10. And they've just got so many weapons and so much ability for explosive plays. So all that said, the fumble on the punt, which was such a weird play in general, it looked, that was another point where it thought that we thought that things were starting to shift in Alabama's favor. Didn't end up happening. Obviously, Tennessee goes down and scores again. Just little things that seemingly go against teams against Alabama didn't seem to hurt Tennessee as much as maybe they should have.
Yeah, I mean, like, most of the time when you're going up against a team like Alabama, you have to play flawlessly to have a shot. You know, Tennessee played an outstanding game, but this was a very sloppy game for Alabama by Nick Saban standards. You know, the number, just glancing at the numbers, they look great. Gibbs put up numbers, Bryce Young put up numbers, but time and time again, just costly penalties for the Crimson Tide. That's one thing I would expect to get largely cleaned up this week before another big game for the Tide next week. But yeah, this is just an all-time win that, I mean, you will take any way that you can get after, you know, coming close so many times. And yeah, this right now, if we're just looking at, you know, just pure counting stats, this is the best offense in America. One of the best passing attacks, of course, as well. But yeah, it's going to be an absolute dogfight when, no pun intended, when Tennessee faces down with Georgia. Finally, some competition, some serious competition, it looks like, for Georgia in the East. After Kentucky has had some good seasons, have never really seemed like they could be on the level of Georgia, Tennessee absolutely looks the part this season.
100%. That is a game to circle. Hopefully, hopefully no one has anything important going on that day.
No, I had a wedding for this one, which was disappointing because I literally knew no one there. But we will overcome. Hopefully, Michigan Penn State. I think this was pretty much what we expected. It was interesting a little bit in the near the end of the first half. Penn State just being statistically dominated somehow took the lead for a brief moment. But the story in this one largely is just an all-time absolutely dominant performance by Michigan's offensive line. And they are so good when they get rolling like this. And Penn State defensively just did not have an answer, especially once it got later in the game.
Run game was superb for Michigan. 55 carries, 418 yards, 4 touchdowns. Blake Corum, again, monster game. McCarthy did it with his legs a little bit. Donovan Edwards did a ton of damage, 67-yard run there. He had 2 scores, 173 yards on 16 carries. Like, this is the hand up. I was wrong, and I owe Michigan an apology. I didn't think they were anything special. It remains to be seen what Penn State is overall, I think. Sean Clifford, for a veteran guy that he kept getting noted as by the broadcast for Big Nude Saturday, played horribly. Like, he was really bad. 7 of 19, 120 yards, no touchdowns. He had the 62-yard run, and that was pretty much all he did this entire game. But yeah, Michigan's defense looked awesome. The offensive line, like you said, looked great. The run game is very hard to stop. They need more out of McCarthy in the passing game. When they get that, then I think they are a true playoff contender. But until that point, they are very one-dimensional.
Michigan just isn't sexy, but when they get rolling like this, very difficult to defend. You know, they are at their best under Harbaugh when they have two home run threats out of the backfield. You saw back-to-back plays, house calls for Edwards and Corum, and not unlike when they had Corum and Hassan Haskins just kind of both filling that role out of the backfield. Takes a lot of the pressure off of J.J. McCarthy, and is, I mean, he's not even the full season starter because of the bullshit that Jim Harbaugh was doing. Should be, but he's still kind of growing in this role. And I mean, when you have guys that can take the pressure off, that makes everything so much easier. And Michigan as a whole really needed this win, because before this week, you could kind of look at the schedule and still more or less pick apart every game. The best win, you know, a two-score win on the road at Iowa is nothing to scoff at, but, you know, home win over Maryland that was a lot closer than a lot of people thought it was, took forever to pull away from a clearly overmatched Indiana team, and the non-conference schedule we've talked about, absolute joke. So a dominant performance like this over a top 10 team, you know, you said it, we still are kind of figuring out what Penn State is, but in the moment, this is a massive win that Michigan really needed for its resume. And now you can start to talking kind of ending up in the same position that Michigan was last year, which is Big Ten champions, college football playoff. That is very much on the table now. And it's going to be a clash of styles if both Michigan and Ohio State can get to the game unblemished. A lot of football to play, but if we get to that point, it makes for a very interesting situation.
Should be a great game, assuming, like you said, we can get there unblemished. I think, again, Michigan gets a lovely treat with a road trip to Rutgers in 2 weeks. They've got Michigan State, who is coming off of a surprising win over Wisconsin in a game of really no one wanted to win, it felt like. But that, again, looking at it, you know, you obviously throw the record books out a little bit in terms of a rivalry game, but if you look at it, they've got Michigan State, Rutgers, Nebraska, and then it's Illinois, who's pretty decent. I think they might be good. I'm not sure yet. And then Ohio State. So really need to fine-tune that offense a little bit more for everyone to feel confident. But I think they've looked as good as just about anyone in the Big Ten this year.
Absolutely. Another epic game happened out west, Utah-USC, another instant classic. Utah holding on for a one-point win over the Trojans, late touchdown and two-point conversion by Cam Rising using his legs. Finally, Utah showing us something, and I mean, just at the proper time and keeping things interesting in the Pac-12 South with the Trojans.
Yeah, this would have been maybe the game of the year if Tennessee-Alabama didn't happen, let alone on the same day. 43-42, absolute thriller. This was a heavyweight slugfest back and forward. USC jumped out early, and then Cam Rising and co. really bounced back nicely in the second quarter and then early part of the second half. Dalton Kincaid was an absolute stud for Utah throughout this game, and Rising made plays when he needed to. This really did feel like the redemption game for not just Utah, but for Cam Rising. He'd been in this situation before already this year. It was the road game at Florida. He made the wrong play, threw an interception in the red zone on a, you know, bad ball. This time he makes the play in the red zone, gets the touchdown to tie it, and then absolutely love the balls on Kyle Whittingham to go for two at home. In the biggest game, I mean, that is their season right there. Roll of the dice, go for it, and they get it. Huge, huge, huge play. USC, there's really not a ton to nitpick here. Obviously, you don't want to give up 43 points, but you're playing one of the best teams in your league and in the country in general with a veteran quarterback who has done really well throughout this last year and a half. Just honestly, secondary needs to shore up a bit, but the offense still looks good, and they slowed down the Utah run game.
Yeah, I mean, I can nitpick. It's the defense, specifically the secondary. Some of the concerns we had coming into this week, and you know, we've seen in different games this season, the Oregon State game really remains an outlier with turnover luck. But other than that, you know, USC has been susceptible to giving up big plays in the passing game. And just a huge night for Utah, emotional night dedicated to former Utes Ty Jordan and Aaron Lowe, who both passed away in recent years. And for the Utes to get a win for those guys and their memories is obviously huge. But, you know, some of the numbers coming out of this, great for Utah, reflect very poorly on USC. Dalton Kincaid, most receptions and yards ever for a Utah tight end. That's, I mean, good for one, really bad for another. Cam Rising, first 400-yard game for a Utah quarterback since 2005. So, you know, Utah coming into this year, we circled this game, said these are the two best offenses in the league. You know, it's been a few years of consistency for Utah with, you know, ball control, really solid defense. This year, a little more excited about the offense. Showed out here after a couple rough performances this season. They're still very much alive in the Pac-12 title race. National picture that we might have thought, you know, not so much. A couple losses will do that, but a Pac-12 title is still very much within reach. And I mean, they absolutely had to have this one. So it's a big win for the program.
Absolutely. This is, we've been waiting again, like you said, for them to show us something. They have finally shown us something.
Another instant classic. There were several on Saturday, TCU, Oklahoma State, double overtime game. The Pokes come up just short. They let a 24-7 lead slip away, a 30-16 lead slip away. They end up falling to TCU here, 43-40. TCU still finding ways to win. Not quite as big a game on the stat sheet for Diggin' to Johnston this week, but still very effective and still very much in the catbird seat in the Big 12.
They are. And the big thing that kept them in this when they really could not get anything going offensively was the run game. They were able to pick apart Oklahoma State's defense with short methodical carries up the middle, picking up 5-6 yard chunks and just getting themselves into position where Duggan can make a play, find Quentin Johnson, find a guy like Barber, Wiley, anyone open, really. We saw some great throws, great catches, but really the defense is left a lot to be desired, obviously. It feels similar to this Utah-USC game, but more so when you look at the stat sheet, it's kind of how did these teams combine for 83 points? Obviously, 23 of those came in overtime, but a lot of it was bend, don't break by the defenses. Being able to hold each other to field goals for a really long stretch in that game. I think it was from the second quarter through part of, from the second quarter until the fourth quarter, they held each other to field goals. So right before the half, TCU cut it to 24-13, and then the first touchdown was TCU in the fourth quarter to cut it to 30-23. So that's where the credit lies. Bend, don't break for the TCU defense. If you're Oklahoma State, you're really just disappointed with the offense's inability to execute at this point. You have a veteran guy like Spencer Sanders. You expect better than 16 of 36 with the touchdown and an interception. He's got to do more. And you've got an absolute weapon in the backfield yet again with Dominic Richardson. Like, give him the ball in space. Three catches, not nearly enough. He needs a lot more opportunities in the passing game because – While the run game has been solid this year, it wasn't enough in this game.
Yeah, and on the other side, I mean, Miller just continuing a very consistent track record of success this year. He's gone over 100 yards three of the last four games. Really just needs touches. This is the only game this season that he's gotten at least 20 carries. Averaging on the year almost 6.5 yards a tote. So as a change of pace, he's been very effective from the outstanding passing attack. But you know, as you noted, you know, there are times that that's what TCU needs to get the ball rolling a bit. And obviously the game winning touchdown in double overtime, second of the day. So very much not a one-dimensional attack for Sonny Dykes. Big reason this team is undefeated. But yeah, it's it takes a lot to put an offense this talented away, is really my big takeaway from this one.
Yeah, absolutely.
This next one was a little bit of a bummer. Was my lock on spread option, and then just before kick, the announcement that Devin Leary was out for the season. So that put the pressure squarely on Syracuse. If it was not already, Syracuse delivered. The defense was excellent. No touchdowns allowed. Win this one in a workmanlike 24-9 fashion. So continuing the perfect season. I mean, it lost a little bit of its luster, but Syracuse needed to take care of business to continue this magical start to the season. And I mean, they absolutely did.
They did. They got what they needed out of the run game. Tucker and Schrader combined for 179 yards on the ground, which was more than NC State's entire passing attack in this game. Schrader needs a little better ball protection, but the defense looked really good in this game. And if you're NC State, you got to – obviously, it's tough to lose a quarterback the level of Devin Leary. You got to regroup quickly, though, because otherwise this season can spiral.
It can. This is a team that came into the season with huge expectations. Obviously, his play has not been great. I don't recall if they said exactly when he injured that, but that could help to explain some of the struggles this year. It's been a little disappointing so far, and this adds to that a little bit. The second loss of the season, but time to turn it around for Syracuse. We'll talk about their next game coming up shortly. It only gets bigger and more difficult from here. Another opportunity to prove the legitimacy of a now top 15 Syracuse football team. But another solid win here. Kentucky, Mississippi State, the sixth and final ranked on ranked matchup from week six. Kentucky can run the ball. Confirmed. Yeah. Chris Rodriguez, nearly 200 yards, two touchdowns. The defense found a way, like LSU, to slow down Mississippi State, and that was enough. Now don't write off Kentucky this year just yet.
Yeah, it came down to exactly what we had talked about last week, is that can the Kentucky defense get a foothold and slow down the passing attack? Because we know Mississippi State's defense isn't great. And that's exactly what happened here. Levis was good enough in the passing game, only one turnover. And then Chris Rodriguez with a workhorse effort, 30 carries, 196 yards and two scores, really did the job. And that's what you need. That's Kentucky football right now. You know, you're not expecting big numbers out of Levis. You just need to be able to give the ball to your running back, let the defense control the line of scrimmage and go from there. And that's what they did.
Yeah, Levis still getting a lot of talk about potentially being the number one pick, and I think we all need to chill out a little bit on that. But he is a guy who can win games for you in the SEC. That's not nothing. But
yep.
Yeah, if Kentucky is a team who cannot run the ball, they're nothing. So to be able to go out and show a full commitment to doing just that, and then you know turn around, shut down Mississippi State. Bulldogs barely tried to run the ball, only ended up with 22 yards, and then the passing attack was largely limited as well, which is what you really have to do going up against Mike Leach in this air raid offense. So, I mean, checked all boxes here. This was a Kentucky team really been struggling the last few weeks, so this was a big bounce-back performance that they really needed.
Absolutely. Defense was flying around out there.
Week six winner. Who you got?
I am going to go with Tennessee.
Yeah, I mean,
surprisingly,
it's Tennessee.
Yeah, I've got a hat tip. I'll give Tulane a shout. They're ranked for the first time in like 20 some years. So credit to them. But yeah, Tennessee is obviously the winner.
Yeah, I mean, Sam, it's got to be the Vols. So a potentially tougher question, who is your loser of week six?
There are a lot of teams that deserve to go in this category. I'm going to go with Notre Dame. Stanford is not good. Stanford is not good. And Notre Dame loses a home game to this Stanford team and scores 14 points. Drew Pine was terrible. The run game was awful. And while the defense held Stanford to 16 points, there wasn't any... There just wasn't enough shown by this team that they were able to get anything done. Stanford dominated time of possession. They outgained the Irish by 84 yards, which doesn't seem like a lot, but in this game, in a two-point game, that means everything. 385 to 301. And Notre Dame had two turnovers, both costly. So they this season, like I said about NC State, the season can spiral out of control pretty quickly. I think the Marshall game was the spiraling point, or at least I thought it was. Three bounce-back wins on the hop. Cal was a tight game. North Carolina, that win looks better and better each week. And then BYU, who knows what BYU is at this point. But you thought they had a chance to right the ship here, beat a Stanford team, beat UNLV, and then they've got they're 5-2 heading into a trip to Syracuse, possibly ranked Syracuse. Who knows? Now you're looking at the schedule and thinking, will they get to six wins? I don't know. I have no confidence in this team, in this offense. Tommy Rees needs to figure it out and figure it out quickly.
I thought the ship had been righted, but apparently not. I thought, you know, things actually might have worked out because Drew Pine seems to be a better passer than Tyler Buchner is. We did not see much of that in this game. And you look at the rest of the schedule and you see some games that you might identify as winnable, like a game against UNLV. But then you remember Marshall and Stanford both have one win against an FBS team. Both have come at Notre Dame Stadium. So not great.
Yeah,
I would even call that bad. I thought about Notre Dame certainly here, but I did not go with them for my loser of the week. I went with Kansas because Mr. Bean stepped up and did his part. But when you get embarrassed by last week's historical loser, you have more than earned this honor yourself. Obviously, Dylan Gabriel being back is a big part of Oklahoma's success because that quarterback room is terrifyingly thin after him, but Kansas stepped out. There were defenders on the field, I'm told, but 487 yards of offense for Oklahoma in the first half. Not great. I mean, that you can't, I can't really ask anything more from the offense. There were a couple head scratching throws from Bean. There's an outstanding interception defensive play by Oklahoma, but the offense did its part here. The defense has been pretty rough for a couple weeks now, but this was the big one. You know, this was an Oklahoma team largely left for dead, responded in a big way for their head coach. It's a game that Kansas should have had, but now we're getting closer to same old Kansas territory. Really should not have justified Oklahoma being favored by over a touchdown in this game, but they found a way to do that.
Yeah, Oklahoma did the damn thing, I'll say. 16 of 21 on third down, which is just impossibly bad from the Kansas defense. Yeah. Those are video game numbers at that point. 701 yards of total offense. They had 43 passing attempts, 57 rushing attempts. If my math checks out, that's 100 offensive snaps for Oklahoma in this game. You got to do better. You just got to do better. If you're the Kansas defense. Any point a stop would have put you back in this ball game. They could not get it, and that's why you see they got hung for 52 and they lose by 10.
Yeah, it's brutal. No other way to slice that. So that is week 6. We have a slightly, but not by much, smaller slate for week 7, paring down from 6 to 5 ranked unranked matchups. We'll start in the ACC. We just talked about Syracuse. They got a little taste of beating a ranked team, albeit without Devin Leary. Now their reward is going to Death Valley to take on Clemson. Who do you like here?
It's Clemson, and I don't think it's particularly close. It has been a fun run for Syracuse. I think the defense has shown a little more than I'd expected. To your point last week, who have they beaten? Not much. Like, this is their best win, obviously, over NC State, but it's without NC State's best player. The run game was okay against NC State. Schrader is... I'm concerned with his decision-making at quarterback. He had 2 interceptions. Did run the ball decently well, but you cannot put yourself in a position to get hit against Clemson because they are big, they are fast, and they are athletic defensively. While they did let Florida State back in the game a little bit last week, I thought Clemson looked improved again. They are continuing to play better and better. I think Clemson wins this in a blowout.
I think Purdue is going to end up being Syracuse's best win. As it was last week, and you could argue remains today. But I agree. I think Clemson wins this by multiple touchdowns probably, but the one thing that would make me a little nervous if I was Clemson, saw last week, defense really struggled against Florida State's rushing attack, gave up their most yards of the season, 206 to the Seminoles. Syracuse runs the ball pretty well between Tucker and Schrader, so that's somewhere where Dino Babers would do well to take advantage, but with it being Clemson, it's possible that was just an off night. They're able to tighten it up pretty quickly. I think this is just kind of welcome to the show kind of game. Syracuse has been a fun story. I said last week, like, I will believe in you if you beat NC State. I am moving the goalposts because Devin Leary was not playing. If you beat Clemson in Death Valley, I will believe in you. But no pressure. But I'm gonna go with Clemson here. Alabama desperately needs a bounce back performance. I'm sure Nick Saban is having fun talks with people this week, getting the boys fired up. They're going up against Mississippi State, who also dropped a game to Kentucky last week. Who is going to be able to bounce back and get the win here?
It's going to be Alabama. I am concerned about their secondary, who just got torched. I think Mississippi State's going to have to take more shots downfield. I think Alabama does clean it up. Ask me later in the week what I think gambling-wise, because that'll be an interesting question with such a large spread. But I do think Alabama bounces back and wins this one against Mississippi State. I just haven't seen enough. I haven't seen enough defensively or in the run game from Mississippi State to really believe in them.
Yeah, it's inconsistent in their run game, certainly, from Mississippi State week to week. They've had some outstanding weeks, and then, you know, like last week, they just abandoned it altogether, can't get anything going. I have not looked at any lines yet this week. I will probably do my card the second we are done recording this. Alabama's a little different this year in that, you know, a lot of the things I've said is just kind of believing in laundry versus what's happened on the field. This is a very undisciplined team for Nick Saban. They are not getting nearly as much out of their wide receivers as we've gotten used to over the last several years. Just first round pick after first round pick. I don't know if we really see anything like that right now. They do have Bryce Young. They do have Jahmyr Gibbs. So it's not really a sob story here. It's just acknowledging that this is not as strong a team, certainly on the defensive side of the football. But Hendon Hooker greater than Will Rogers. Josh Heupel's offense to this point, say, much better than Mike Leach's, and you really don't want to run into Nick Saban after a loss. You're going to get some mental mistakes, all the penalties like you saw last week. I'd be shocked if we see that 2 weeks in a row. If we do, people's heads are going to roll. So I'm going to go Alabama here.
I would love to see a line on total penalties for Alabama.
See. TCU, Kansas State. Kansas State's the one loss is looking a little bit better as TCU cracked the top 25 this week. TCU has lost three straight to the Wildcats, who are off to their best starts under their first head coach since Bill Snyder, Chris Kleeman. I can't remember how to say it. I need to watch more of their games on TV live. But who do you got here?
I'm taking TCU. The emotions of last week's win are going to be aided in the fact that they are at home again. Kansas State plays an interesting style in that they run the ball a lot, and I mean a lot. So the run defense is going to need to step up for TCU, but Adrian Martinez really not the biggest threat with his arm. That said, I think Duggan and company can have a big game yet again. I like what the offensive line has been able to do. They just need to protect and make sure they can get the ball off. I think this is going to be a close game. Stylistically, I think they both kind of want to run the ball more often than not. And it should be a quicker, maybe low score, maybe even low scoring game, dare I say. Something in the 20s, I think TCU wins by a touchdown.
I mean, I like this. I kind of wish more schools with like a very specific pronounced style of play just continue that coach to coach. Like, great example, Georgia Tech. I wish Jeff Collins just came in. It's like, you know what? We're still going to run the triple option. Like, I see what we have.
Still
here.
Be there.
Yeah. The roster was better suited to that when he got there, yeah. Certainly. But yeah, Martinez is only throwing it about like 23 times a game. They've got a great running combination in the backfield with him and Deuce Vaughn. But is Adrian Martinez a quarterback of a top 15 team? I don't think he should be. He almost is right now. But yeah. I don't think they're going to get over that hump. TCU has just been too good offensively. Kansas State can play a heck of a lot of defense. They have been doing that to teams the last few weeks. But they've been playing in close games week to week. Got a couple blowouts to start the year, and then Tulane came. Offense wasn't able to get enough going, and then last 3 weeks, solid wins over Big 12 opponents. A 10-9 slobber knocker last game out over Iowa State, who just seems to be playing that game with almost everyone. But
yeah,
I think TCU is going to put a bit more pressure on the defense, and I think it'll be a big ask of TCU's front, but I think they will be able to slow down Kansas State more than Kansas State will be able to slow down TCU's passing attack. So I'm going to go with the Horned Frogs here.
Yeah, you got to dare Martinez to throw.
Yeah. Game day will be in the Pacific Northwest, Eugene, Oregon, where we've got a top 10 matchup that I don't think a lot of people saw coming, especially after week one. UCLA at Oregon. Who you got?
This is a classic game where I go back against everything I said and go with Bo Nix. So I am going to do the opposite and take UCLA. I think DTR is the better quarterback. I think they are just – this is going to be a fun, fast-paced game. Run and gun, lot going on in this game. Charbonnet is going to be the key. For me, because I don't think either defense is going to get many stops. So if UCLA can run the ball well, they're going to open things up for DTR to make plays. We know what Bo Nix can do. I don't think it's going to be any shock in this game. How much can they get out of their defense is the question. Home field matters, but I think that UCLA is going to squeak out the win here. High scoring, tight game.
It is flying very under the radar, which is surprising given the last several years and the hype associated with it. But Bo Nix is unquestionably a top 10 quarterback in the country this year. Since the Georgia game, he has been absolutely cooking. 12 touchdowns, in the air, 8 on the ground, only one pick, putting up over 320 yards of offense per game. And it feels wild to say that the surest thing in this Dan Lanning team is Bo Nix in the offense. The defense has been quite shaky, which I certainly did not expect coming into the season. I thought the other way, the defense would be solid and probably bail out Bo Nix in some games. But it's been the opposite. Just a full reset seemingly after the week one debacle, and Oregon has come out the other side smelling like roses and hoping that that is where their season ends. UCLA, the two-headed monster in the backfield, DTR, he's also playing consistently well, which is something that had largely eluded him in his career. Chip Kelly homecoming could be some drama there. I don't know where things stand at this point, but I like this to be a shootout. I think, UCLA's defense has shown us that they have no problem being in those type of games, because let's face it, DTR has been awesome. Charbonnet has been awesome. I'm going to go with Oregon at home, though. I think this is going to come down to the wire. If I am banking on a defense to make one stop in this game, I'm going to take the talent that Oregon has at its disposal. Just only one stop, that's all. But I'm going to go with the Ducks here.
So to your credit, Bo Nix is absolutely playing better. He's completing 70% of his passes, 12-3 TD to interception ratio. Can I give you a wild stat here?
I'm scared.
Passer rating, Bo Nix, 157.4. Graham Mertz, 157.7. Mertz is above Bo Nix in passer rating.
I will never use passer rating to support any of my arguments.
Yes, so do not do that. It basically is the point.
Like buyout money, passer rating is fake.
That's true.
Doesn't mean
but that is that, and just to hammer home the point, Garrett Schrader at Syracuse is a 171.1. So case in point.
He is playing really well. That is what the folks at home
I agree.
His QBR is also top 10. But just from the numbers perspective, and I mean, he's had outstanding games. It's really just the Georgia one correctly put a damper on the season for Oregon and him specifically. Mm-hmm. And been banging the drum, been calling him a disappointment for years, which he was at Auburn. He's playing really good football right now. This is a big opportunity to continue to elevate the Ducks with another national audience, big time game.
It's good for me if he's playing well, because I said he was one of the best quarterbacks in the conference. So here we go.
Yes. I think it's unquestioned. I mean, that's the thing with the Pac-12 this year. I would say Bo Nix is, we can only confidently say top three, because Williams and DTR have been playing so well. And then you have Cam Rising, bumping his way back in there too. The Pac-12 is not short on excellent quarterbacks this year.
Loaded with quarterbacks. I mean,
coincidentally, great teams as well. Funny how that works.
Crazy.
The last ranked on ranked matchup, Texas, top 20. They survived Iowa State, who has made it their mission to just slop up the game against anyone they play against this year. Their reward is traveling to Stillwater to take on Oklahoma State, coming off that double OT loss to TCU. A couple of teams licking their wounds in a way, but which way are you leaning here?
I like the Pokes, and I like them big. I think they run this up on Texas. I'm not impressed with Texas. Iowa State is not a good football team. I'm going to just come out and say it. They play good defense. The offense is disgusting. It is literally Xavier Hutchinson and not much else. And Texas should have lost that game. There's no reason for Texas to be in the rankings right now. And I think Oklahoma State is just by and far the better team. They will shore things up defensively. They'll clean it up a bit. You worry about Bijan Robinson having a big game for sure. But I think Sanders bounces back. I think they get the run game back on track. I think they win this one by two scores.
Iowa State is just going to play one score game with you. That's really their MO. Unfortunately, they're 1-4 in those games. They've lost their last three by a combined 7 points, but they are going to just muck it up and dare you to beat them, which most teams are at this point. Shout out Kirk Ferentz and the Iowa Hawkeyes. But I'm going to go with Texas.
Wow.
I'm going to go with Texas here. And a big reason for that is that Texas's defense has been a lot better this year than they have been in some time. And I think this was often a mistake that I or others would make in the preseason, which people consistently do, is like, why aren't Big 12 defenses better? It's like, you look at all the talent they have here, some of the coordinators they've had, and it makes sense on paper that they would be better than they end up being at the end of the season. But the last 3 weeks in particular, basically since that Texas Tech lost, they have looked worlds better. And I mean, we saw what they did against Alabama early in the season. I'm not giving that official moral victory status, but not the worst thing in the world to slow down Alabama that much. If we get a full game from Quinn Ewers, I think this is a game that that Texas wins. During the day, don't have to worry about the crowd as much in that situation. They can make the exact same amount of noise, but for some reason, it always feels louder at night in Stillwater. And Oklahoma State's offense really just has not impressed me this year. I keep waiting for a massive Spencer Sanders performance, and it's been a bit underwhelming so far this year. Like, this, I think, unquestionably was his team coming into this year, and it hasn't been as consistent a ride as you'd like it to be. Like, this year kind of almost feels like a Bo Nix season at Auburn, where like you see flashes every so often, but it's hard for him to string together, several drives in a row or several strong games in a row. If he wants to flip the switch, this would be a terrific week to do it. But I think this has the potential to be a lower scoring game if Oklahoma State's defense can lock in. If they don't, we've seen what Texas's offense is capable of at full strength. But either way, I think the Longhorns get a win, and then we're going to have annoying social media conversations.
I think you hit on a very important point. I believe that Spencer Sanders is the Big 12's version of Bo Nix, like, full and truly. And it's just kismet that they're both my guys, air quote, my guys, because they are the Spider-Man meme pointing at each other. That's just what they do. That said, they are known for flashes. I believe more in Sanders than I do in Bo Nix, which is shocking to say at this point, but that's just where I'm at. And I think the run game's got a real good chance to play better here. So I got to stick with Oklahoma State. After going against them last week, might I add, man of integrity.
I know. I was surprised. I knew we'd be on opposite sides of this game. It pains me a little to pick Texas. I thought for sure you would take him over TCU last week. You were right not to do so. Credit to you, as was
I know my pokes.
Well, we'll see this week. Yeah, you had him against Baylor as well, so that was the correct decision. But we will be back later this week for another spread option, and then we will have these five ranked games to break down on next week's show. College basketball is coming soon. We will get back to you later on a schedule for that, but the AP poll did come out today and people were getting mad online, so always a sign that it's coming. We are mere weeks away from that season to tip off, so we will start the basketball football shows shortly, but until then, we will see you here next time.